had me a job down at the local mill. Work dried up, not a mill is ill. I can't pay my bills. The repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, two kids, a car, and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. People, they used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working, we're not a working.
Welcome to the Illinois World Labor Hour. I'm your host, David Johnson, here with co-host Tom Thomas and Bob Pelesny. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers. Do not necessarily represent those of WFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Again, you're listening to the Illinois World Labor Hour, broadcast at 90.1 FM and webcast worldwide at www.weft.org. Today on the show, we're going to have some usual news items along with the cultural corner with Tom Thomas and his poem of the week, Two Nations. And we have a very special guest and possibly a second guest coming to the show today. They were from the GEO Graduate Employees Union at the University of Illinois. Currently, they're having some tough contract negotiations, and we're going to get a little insight from our guests, one of whom is here in the studio right now, Damian Matthew. And first of all, we'll go to the underwriting. Tom?
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois Labor Hour. a Democratic Union, BMWE, celebrates the Voice for Labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. Finally, the Illinois Labor Hour, supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. Dave?
Okay, Tom, thanks. So now we'll go to our news headlines, and we'll start off today with Bob Plesney.
Yeah, Dave, I got a couple of stories this week. One was state workers filled Parkland Room to protest a pay cut proposal. And protesting a proposal to cut their pay to fund their pensions, hundreds of state workers filled the Parkland College Hall Monday with heated debate. Governor Pat Quinn, who was not at the meeting, has proposed their state workers, including college and public school teachers, take a 2% pay cut to be sent to their underfunded pension system. He also proposes a two-tiered system that would give new hires a smaller benefits package and raise the retirement age for some to 67. Workers from unions at the University of Illinois, Eastern Illinois University, community colleges, and state prisons drove to Champaign to stand up for their rights, literally, because there weren't enough chairs for the more than 300 workers and retirees. They argued that Illinois state workers have contributed 8 or 9% of their earnings into a system that the state has underfunded since it was created in 1939. They said state pensions average $18,000, barely enough to live on before cuts, since these workers do not receive Social Security. And Illinois has a $73 billion deficit in unfunded pension liabilities.
$73 billion?
$73 billion.
Wow.
Yeah. And another story here, Dave. A new study will undercut key business group claims about Employee Free Choice Act. A new study to be released, it was released on Tuesday this week, I believe. It was released by the AFL-CIO, and it undercuts a claim being made by the pro-business groups about the Employee Free Choice Act that it would enable labor officials to intimidate workers into joining unions. The study by University of Illinois professor Robert Bruno analyzed what has happened in the past 6 years in Illinois, where state law has created a system similar to that which would be created nationally by EFCA. It concludes that even though over 20,000 Illinois public sector workers joined unions during that time period, not a single case of union intimidation has been proven. And that wraps that up.
Okay.
I think you mentioned We're going to be talking to Robert Bruno?
Yes. In fact, I've got contact information for Robert Bruno from a good friend who's also in media, labor media, Greg Buzel. And Robert Bruno is a professor at the U of I in Chicago. And
right.
He suggested I contact him. I got his contact info, and I think probably a very good likelihood that we'll have him on the air, phone-in interview guest here in the future.
Definitely.
Okay. Also, it's quite interesting about how that study he did about the public sector, you know, that there was no, of 20,000 workers that are unionized, there wasn't one single case of intimidation. Of course, that's a whole different story in the public sector, I mean, in the private sector than in the public. Intimidation is, blatant. Okay, Tom.
Okay.
On Tuesday, March 17, 2009, a group of workers in the industrial town of Windsor, Ontario, occupied the Aradco Auto Parts plant. The 80 workers at the plant, along with workers from the neighboring Aramco plant, had been told on March 9th that they need not report for work. That led to the occupation, which marks the reawakening of the Occupied Factories movement in Canada and is an important turning point in the ongoing crises of the North American auto industry. Aradco and Aramco produce motor mounts and other metal parts almost exclusively for Chrysler. The news that Chrysler planned to terminate its contract with Catalina Precision Products, the parent company of Aradco and Aramco, led to the closure of the factories. The workers, by law, are owed back pay, vacation pay, and termination and severance pay, totaling an estimated $1.7 million. As a Chrysler truck showed up at the gates on March 18th, about 30 workers, whose lines had swelled to around 100 individuals with the arrival of support from the Chrysler Chrysler assembly plant formed a blockade, preventing the truck and Chrysler security vehicles from entering. Shortly before 6 p.m., a group of about a half dozen workers appeared on the roof of the factory and planted the Canadian Auto Workers Local 195 flag on the roof, announcing that the workers had taken control of the factory. Unfortunately, the deal negotiated by the CAW leadership only provided $400,000 for the workers, which is to be paid by Chrysler and not Catalina Precision Products. This is a $1.3 million less than what the workers are actually owed. Hopefully, workers at the next occupied plant will know not to end their occupation unless a full vote of all workers has been taken.
Exactly, just like Republic Windows.
Absolutely. Trying to curb home foreclosures, the U.S. Senate voted on Wednesday to make it easier for homeowners with risky credit to switch to a lower-cost mortgage backed by the government. The bill, which passed 91-5, also would give banks a break by encouraging reduced fees they must pay for the government to insure deposits. While both steps put taxpayer money on the line, lawmakers say the legislation is needed to prevent the economy from getting worse. Absent from the measure was a bankruptcy provision that President Obama had promised to push through Congress, but backed down on amid stiff opposition from the banking sector. The Senate housing bill would expand the existing $300 billion program called Hope for Homeowners, which encourages lenders to lower an individual's mortgage payment if the homeowner agrees to pay an insurance premium. This program, which is set to expire in 2011, is intended to swap out a homeowner's high interest rates for a 30-year fixed loan backed by the Federal Housing Administration. The Senate bill would also expand eligibility for assistance. For example, the program currently bans participants who intentionally defaulted on a mortgage or other substantial debt. The Senate bill will narrow that prohibition to defaults within the last 5 years. Finally, the Employee Free Choice Act. Not since union hater Reagan and the air traffic controller strike has our nation seen such debate on the future of organized labor. Although a deepening recession, stagnant and declining wages, and the victory at Republic Window and Door Factory in Chicago have all contributed to the growing dialogue, the main impetus for such discussion has been the election of Barack Obama and his support for the bill known as the Employee Free Choice Act. If it passes, the EFCA will do a number of things. First, it will give legal backing to card check union elections, bringing an end to fixed elections. Secondly, it will increase the penalties when bosses fire union supporters because they are union supporters. And finally, in the event that workers choose to form unions or join already existing unions, the EFCA will allow either of the parties involved, the company or the union, to call in government arbitrators to effect and impose a contract. No workers should oppose the EFCA. Instead, we should use the opportunity opened by it to educate our fellow members on the need for class power. Even more than material gains, only by exercising class power can workers begin to create a society that always puts human need first, not just the rich ones, but all humans.
Thank you, Tom. And a related story, this is from April 20th. These are two back-to-back stories. The April 20th story begins this way. Pennsylvania union members have delivered tens of thousands of letters in support of the Employee Free Choice Act to Senator Arlen Specter. Specter, who once co-sponsored the Employee Free Choice Act before he flipped on the bill last month, announced he would support a minority filibuster to prevent it from coming to a vote, despite once saying he was delighted to support it. Specter now is advancing falsehoods about the bill, parroting the extremist charge that would take away the secret ballot process, which it would not. Rallies asking Specter to support the Employee Choice Act have taken place across the state. In response, thousands of union members, community activists, religious and civil rights leaders, and other members of the broad coalition in support of the EFCA have taken action across the state to make their voices heard. In the past 2 weeks, they have held 7 rallies outside of Specter's offices in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Allenstown, Harrisburg, Erie, Wilkes Barre, and Scranton. Supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act have gathered more than 50,000 letters, 35,000 postcards, and 12,000 petitions from Pennsylvanians who support the freedom to form unions and bargain. Specter's staff grew increasingly aggressive every event, Pennsylvania union members report. At Specter's Wilkes Barre office, where union members and allies delivered thousands of letters of petitions, United Steelworkers member Tim Waters reports that they were told by a staffer, quote, "As soon as you leave, your letters will go straight in the trash." Hello, these are Pennsylvania residents whom the senator represents. Is this the way to treat your constituents? And what's interesting, since that time, Alan Spector has jumped parties from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party. And then just looks like yesterday, this other news item. New compromise measures supported by Dianne Feinstein and Alan Spector may pave the way for the passage of the Employee Free Choice Act. With 900,000 union members in the state of Pennsylvania, the Arlen Specter firewall appears to be crumbling. He knows he cannot win Pennsylvania without labor, and they've made it clear that their support is contingent on his support for the Employee Free Choice Act, which is why Perry Pritzker and fellow billionaires are getting nervous, publicly breaking with the White House and President Obama's bill. The centrist Dems of the Senate, led by Tom Harkin, know they won't be able to shrug this away and say, what can we do? We don't have the votes. So anyway, stay tuned in our future editions of the Illinois Labor Hour. We'll give you updates on that. In the meantime, we're going to listen to a public service announcement from WFT, and then we're going to listen to some workers' independent news.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, encouraging you to call WEFT. Yes, Champaign, Urbana, and East Central Illinois has a community radio station. Don't take it for granted. It's yours. You can call 359-9338. That's 359-9338. That's Fly WEFT. Just dial that out.
Yes, please call in and support WFT. We still have one autographed copy of Standing Up to the Madness with Amy Goodman. And now we'll listen to a little bit of workers' independent news.
GM are talking again in an effort to reach an agreement on retiree health care and other issues. GM says it's burning through cash at a more rapid rate than ever as a June 1st deadline looms to present its revamped restructuring plan to the federal government. GM says a bankruptcy filing similar to Chrysler's is probable, but the company is still trying to avoid it. GM has lost $6 billion in the first quarter of 2009 and has an estimated $10.2 billion in cash, just enough to provide liquidity. More than 1,000 U.S. scholars nationwide are urging Congress to pass the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform. The scholars signed a letter to Congress calling the labor law reform, making it easier to join unions without employer intimidation, critical for economic recovery and also for protecting democratic values. Chicago Jobs with Justice Director James Thindwa says workers are determined to pass the Employee Free Choice Act.
Corporations cannot continue to abuse workers, to undermine workers, to frustrate the right of workers to organize. This law is going to once again empower us to really give them a fight back, to take back our rights at work, and to say that as workers, we're going to be organized, and we're going to push for workers' rights, and we're going to push to enrich this democracy.
150 historians have also signed a letter to Congress supporting the Employee Free Choice Act. They say labor law has weakened from its original intent over the years, and reform is needed to reassert the right of workers to freely associate in unions. More states have begun turning to furloughs to bridge budget gaps. Jesse Russell reports.
Wisconsin has now entered the furlough fray in an attempt to offset a budget gap. Democratic Governor Jim Doyle issued a proposal on Thursday that would call for workers to accept 16 furlough days over the next 2 years and slashes 700 jobs. The governor is additionally asking state workers to give up a 2% pay increase to avoid an additional 400 job cuts. The 10,000 administrative workers in Wisconsin not covered by a union contract will also see a 2% pay raise blocked. Wisconsin is only the most recent state to propose furloughs. That state's announcement comes just 2 days after Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm announced plans to furlough state workers for 6 days and cut 250 state worker positions. An additional 100 state trooper positions will also be cut. On Tuesday, state workers in North Carolina plan to hold a rally to protest furloughs that will amount to 10 hours off over the next 2 months.
Walmart has avoided criminal charges in the trampling death of a worker during a post-Thanksgiving rush on Long Island. Instead, the world's largest retailer will pay nearly $2 million, a portion of which will go to compensate those injured in the rush, and the rest will go toward community projects. The company will be developing a new crowd management strategy to implement during the holiday shopping season at its stores in New York. Nowhere in the agreement, though, between Nassau County and the company does Walmart admit guilt or any wrongdoing in the incident. You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Okay, we're back, and it was Workers' Independent News, and I'll say we've got Actually, I've got a little commentary here on I want to talk about a little later here in the show. But basically what it is it's from the Black Agenda Reporter. And so basically says Obama's first 100 days, a report card on his progress. And I think this is, you know, really a very interesting report here. I mean, they go, you know, it's mainly an African-American organization. However, they deal with a lot of issues that affect the general public. And anyway, what's interesting, I'll just go down it here real quick. Basically, it says, the 100-day report card is an enduring tradition in American journalism for a very good reason. It's journalists' job to help citizens make sense of the world, to seek the truth and tell it without fear or favor, no matter where it leads. Gee, I think this needs to be communicated to the corporate media in this country. 3 months and a week into a new administration, everybody knows where the men's and ladies' room are. Most of the key hires are in place, and the bus has definitely cleared the station. There's plenty of evidence by now to assess where it's going and whether it's any place we really ought to be headed. So should we grade President Obama what he's promised or what people's needs? The answer to this would be easy. It all depends on whether we imagine government derives its authority from the blessedness of anointed men and women in office, or whether legitimacy comes from the informed consent of the governed. Most of us who were not home school learned if the latter way, governments are legit only insofar as they serve the people. Limiting the scope of a report card to what politicians promise confers upon them the power to look down our collective imagination, deny our hunger and thirst for justice before we can even express it. And anyway, a lot of the key categories here, and just go down them real quick. If you want to read this full report, because they give the reasons of why he scored the points he did on these categories, you can go to www.blackagendareporter.com. And just to go down them real quick, healthcare reform, Obama gets 4 out of 9 points. I think that was well overly generous. I'd have given him 0 out of 9 because he has made statements that single payer is off the table. He's excluded John Conyers or any single payer advocate training hearings. And as you heard in the last news report, when there was a Senate hearing this week, 8 people stood up in the gallery and spoke out of a single payer health insurance were arrested and removed from the gallery. Because why were they doing this? Is because nobody was allowed in to speak about public single payer health care. It was only executives and lobbyists from the private health insurance industry. So I'm disagreeing with him on that. I would give him 0 out of 9 on health care reform. Creating new jobs and preserving old ones, he gets 1 point out of 5 for at least his rhetoric on green jobs. Number 3, fully funding and preserving public education, 0 points, have a here of a possible 6, mainly because of his promotion of trying to privatize charter schools, public schools into charter schools with public money. War and peace, 0 out of 9 points. Transportation, 4 points out of 5. Wall Street bailout, 0 points out of 6. Debt and foreclosure crisis, a single hopeful point out of 6. Investigating Bush-era war crimes and other crimes, 0 out of 5. Criminalizing immigration and militarizing the border, 2 out of 5. Broadband for everyone and a just and fair media, 2 points awarded here for substance and 1 for hope. Environment, 1 point out of 5. Mass imprisonment, 0 out of 5 points. Employee Free Choice Act, 2 points of a possible 5 and slipping. Urban policy, 1 out of 5, and privatization of government agencies and services, 0 points out of 5. And this concludes here by saying 100 days is far too early for anyone to score 100 points on a list of concerns like these. 55 would have been passing, 45 a sign of hopes being actually redeemed on some fronts. But under 25 out of possible 100, our first black president is at best a chronic underachiever as far as the real needs of African Americans and the general population of Americans are concerned. So if you want to read that full report, you can go to the blackagendareporter.com.
In labor's glorious history was many a union maid who stood up to the bosses so staunch and unafraid. Molly Jackson, Mother Jones fought for a better way. But let's sing of Fanny Sellins and remember her today. All over Pennsylvania, Fanny spread the union word. In the coal fields and the convoys, the hope was heard. United we will bargain, but we must beg. Fanny Sellins spread dreams of the UMWA.
our children 20-80 hours a week. Found time to fight injustice and bring power to the meek. She fought with tireless energy, no duty would she shirk. Though murderers got short her life, we carry on her work. Slums of Ducktown in the summer of 19, an unarmed striking miner was gunned down by deputies.
And now we are at that point at the Illinois World Labor Hour for the Cultural Corner with Tom Thomas and his poem today, Two Nations.
Hunger is always impatient and needing to be satisfied, and whom that hunger belongs to are the ones we trusted who lied. Handing out billions of dollars and not knowing where it all went, they're still handing out the layoffs since the cash to stop that was spent. We are becoming two nations, one very rich, one very poor. Unless we all come together, our nation's dream may be no more. No one person deserves to be any richer than one who's poor. No hungry soul should ever be too broke to go into a store. To get the Social Security that you worked a lifetime to earn, now soon may become as easy as getting wet water to burn. Not broke from not wanting to work, not idle from being lazy, the unemployed are wondering, are all of our leaders crazy? Ask the hungry day laborer, picking food with fingers bloody, if the fascist who owned the Sprouts is someone they call good buddy. Two Nations was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on May 7th, 2009, and was first recited live May 9th, 2009 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. We have some public service announcements here. First of all, tune in this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. on UPTV Comcast Channel 6 for Labor's View, a television show bringing you information about issues current to the working class as well as labor history. And this Sunday's program is going to have special guest Ricky Baldwin, and we'll be showing a DVD from Labor on the Job in San Francisco about a unionization attempt of a Walmart building site, as well as talking about the Walmartization of the economy.
Yeah, Dave, I've got a public service announcement here. The Bedlam Theater presents Dolly's Liquid Ladies, and the opening act is The Mustache's Dream, or The Dash of the Stash by the Go Puppets Theater. That's going on at 7 p.m. this Sunday, May 10th, at the Red Herring Coffee House, 1209 West Oregon, at Matthews in Urbana. There is a small admittance fee. And welcome to the World's Fair. Deep in the heart of Coney Island, we bring you the Midway's only surrealist funhouse, where you can take a tour through your own most perverted secrets and see your most terrifying nightmares. See social conventions tossed to the wind. Beautiful mermaids swim in the waters of our collective fantasies, clothed only in their commitment to high art. Come one, come all, to Salvador Dali's Dream of Venus, where even your most shameful desires come true. And that's 7 p.m. at the Red Herring Coffee House.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth Simpson, for that PSA.
Champaign County Healthcare Consumers at CCHCC is once more asking you to take action to help Illinois join the 13 other states that currently allow the seriously and terminally ill to use medically prescribed marijuana to alleviate their pain and suffering when other forms of medication fail. Suffering patients have already waited for years and cannot afford further delay. Last month, both the Senate and House bill passed out of committee for the first time in state history. The Senate is poised to vote on the bill any day now. And Illinois is not alone in fighting for the rights of the seriously and terminally ill. Last week, medical marijuana legislation was passed by the Minnesota Senate, the Rhode Island House, and the New Hampshire House and Senate. Illinois could be next. Senate Bill 1381, the Compassionate Use of Medical Cannabis Act, may be voted on by the end of the week or sometime next week. And CCHCC is asking you to call your senator today. The House has a similar bill, House Bill 2514, which is moving forward toward a vote soon and needs your support. Call your senator today For those of you who don't know, in this area, the senator is Mike Frerichs. He can be reached in Champaign at 355-5252 or in his Springfield office at 782-2507. Also, you can call Naomi Jacobson at 373-5000. That's Naomi Jacobson, 373-5000, or call the CCHCC, Champaign County Healthcare. Okay, at 352-9745. At CCHCC at 352-9745.
Yes, and lastly, check out the brand new May edition of the Public Eye. There's a good article in there entitled "There's a War Going On for Your Mind: Labor Media in Central Illinois," which covers the Illinois World Labor Hour, Labor's View Television, the Public Eye newspaper, as well as a critical ear on WRFU. Okay, then we're going to listen to a little Ann Feeney here, and we'll be right here with our guests shortly.
Pip 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 way to do way to do pip 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 way to do way to do pip 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 boom 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 sha na 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 doobie doobie
down doobie do down down my computer's down doobie do down down my computer's down doobie do down down and punch it in is all we do right from the day we got those VDTs. My life has been so full of misery. No one knows what we've been through. And punch it in is all we do. Remember when you held that pencil tight and all you had to know was how to write. Now there's 50 different screens to view. And punch it in is all we do. They say that using software's hard to do. Now I know that it's true. This program's blowing my mind. I tried to enter EKG, it came up under Valentine. I wish I knew what switch to pull. I think the situation's terminal. The system's down and I am too. And punch it in is all we do. They say that using software's hard to do.
Okay, welcome back, and we have a pledge here from Ken Green in Saybrook, Illinois. He pledged $100, and he is going to get an autographed copy of Amy Goodman's book, Stop the Mammoths. Thank you very much, Ken, for your pledge and support for WFT Community Radio. Okay, so we have some special guests here today from the GEO Graduate Employees Union, Damon Matthews and Ingbert Floyd. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Well, from what I understand is there's been negotiations going on between your union and the University of Illinois administration for a little while now. And what I understand, just since looking at local media here, that's kind of hit a little bit of an impasse. You want to tell us a little about this?
Oh, sure. So we introduced our proposal for a contract on the 21st of last month. And it was a comprehensive contract, basically ready to go right out of the box if they wanted. It was actually an amendment, an amended version of this current contract that we're under right now. So a lot of the language was already, hashed over quite a bit, leading up to this. So we were expecting it to go actually pretty smoothly. So we introduced our proposal on the 21st. We had our second meeting this Tuesday, and we really just didn't make any progress at all. It was kind of a disappointing session. They brought up a bunch of, procedural issues, which they brought up last time, and GEO rejected them all last time, and it was almost verbatim what they brought up last time. Huh. So I don't know what they were expecting to come from that.
Well, it sounds like they're trying to wear you down. I mean, it doesn't sound like they're serious. They brought back the very same things.
I don't want to get into their head but it was a disappointing session, to say the least, and we walked away from it. Basically, the only thing we agreed on was that we need a federal mediator.
Okay. At least you agreed on something, I guess. Okay. What else? Where do you go from here, then, besides the media? I mean, what is kind of is there any how can I put it? I mean, the public needs to know about all this. And is there any way the public can help?
Absolutely. Stay tuned to what the GEO is putting out in press releases and things like that. If we need people for rallies and things like that, the community is welcome to come out and support us in that.
Yeah, we have a website, geocontract.org, which is specifically devoted to our bargaining process. And so you can see regular updates there. And if you like, you can contact us, and we can add you to a mailing list to keep you updated as well. So my email is ifloyd2@uiuc.edu, and you can feel free to email me anytime if you have any questions.
Do you, does the Graduate Employees Union have a website?
Yes, we do. It's uiGEO.org.
uiGEO.org. Okay.
That's correct.
All right. Well, you know, your union has been around for about 15 years now. I remember I was at the struggle just to get union recognition, including the occupation of the administration building and all that wondrous history. And I just want to comment that you're one of the most vibrant and democratic unions here in Champaign County, in my opinion. Not the only one, but I think definitely in the forefront of the local labor movement. And what really surprises me, considering that, I mean, you've got kind of a transient membership base, if you will. I mean, you know, most people come here for graduate studies, and they're usually here, what, 5 years on average?
Yeah, it's true. And our bargaining unit is defined in kind of a strange way. Like, there's a very specific set of appointments that a graduate employee would get that qualifies them to be in the bargaining unit. And people, you know, drift in and out of those classifications quite a bit. But even at that, I think we are one of the, if not the biggest union in Champaign County, with over 2,000 members in the bargaining unit. So,
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's extraordinary considering the nature of your bargaining unit, that you are such a you know, a vibrant and you know, a militant, so to speak, union. and when I say the word militant, what I mean by that is just a union that's willing to represent their members and stand up for what they need. And unfortunately, that's become something of a rarity in the labor movement these days.
Yeah, I would say, and in addition to, I mean, a militant in support of our members, but also in solidarity with the other unions on campus, too. I mean, we support the workers' struggle for all of those folks. So,
yeah, and I have to comment that a lot of your rallies, I mean, they've gotten results. I mean, it's, and I love going to the rallies where you guys are a presence. It's funny, I went to, I think the last, or a couple, about a year ago, I went to one, and it was with the other, some of the other campus unions, and we walked a ways, and then we walked down Wright Street as we come towards the YMCA where your offices are. Here comes the GEO contingent. Loud. and numerous. I mean, it was like, you know, it was like about a third of the whole procession were graduate employees, and they had these cans with marbles in them. Boy, it really added a boost. You could tell all of a sudden people that were kind of laming out on their sloganing, all of a sudden when you guys came into the procession, not only added the numbers, but you could just tell by people's, they were louder and more enthusiastic in their chants and everything. So, but anyway, back to this issue here. I wanted to, pleading poverty, or what's going on as far as their transients?
You know, we haven't gotten that message from the administration side of the table.
And we haven't really gotten much of any message from the university side of the table.
All right. Because I thought that they were going to maybe try to use a tactic that, oh, we're facing all sorts of budget cuts, this, that, and the other, which, you know, of course, now, I guess they're going to be in a hard position to claim that now, considering there's been some state monies that have come forward, as as some federal stimulus money. And I also wanted to add here a News Gazette article I saw this morning when I was sort of compiling stories for the show and everything, when Chancellor White was before a Illinois House committee, he was asked by Representative Rose why the university's faculty at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign has increased during a period of limited state funding. I guess Chancellor White was quoted as saying, the University of Illinois is a successful growing enterprise. Enterprise, White said, noting that although state support has been flat, the university's revenue is growing by about 4% a year of a budget of $4.3 billion. He said about $1.1 billion comes to the state. He mentioned that undergraduate enrollment has grown by about 4,000 students, which just before we came on the show, we were kind of guesstimating. You guys said that was probably about an additional 10% added to the rolls of the undergraduate students.
Yeah, about that, yeah.
So that sounds like quite a vibrant institution. It sounds like they would have plenty of resources to pay their all their employees living wages and you know, healthcare benefits.
Well, I mean, we actually crunched the numbers, and living wage is exactly one of the issues that we were trying to bring up in our proposal. And it ends up being, I think it was like a fraction of a percent, wasn't it, of the total budget increase in what we were asking, just to bring the lowest paid teaching assistants up to what the university itself classifies as the minimum income required to live in this community. So we're not really asking for a whole lot. I mean, we appreciate that this is, you know, hard financial times, but like you said, they're not just getting their funding from the state. They've got other piles of money to dip into also, and we're not really asking for a whole lot.
Well, it actually surprised me, quite frankly, that only about a fourth of their funding's from the state. The other three-fourths is from whatever, private donors or
right. Well,
whatever.
I mean, and they argue that some of those funds are restricted and can't be tapped. Well, you know, I'm not an accountant, so I can't really say. But there's some issues about which of those monies can be tapped into.
Sure, and we all know by accounting firms like what was the accounting firm, Bob Anderson?
They're one of them.
Yeah,
Arthur Anderson.
Yes, doctoring of books for Enron and all these other.
Yep.
Indeed, Bob. You saw an article in the Daily Illini. Was that from yesterday?
Yes, it was, Dave, Friday. And Peter Campbell, he's the
communications officer.
Mm-hmm. He said that our team came to the session prepared with three specific proposals related to the contract. And when we tried to pass these across the table, the university administration team again insisted on discussing extraneous issues not related to the contract.
Yeah.
And
in fact, we picked those three issues because we thought those would be like the low-hanging fruit, like the easiest of our proposal to actually negotiate.
Something to
with
get
them.
You started, you could agree on.
Really easy things. Yeah. It was parking, a union rights issue about getting some release time to get graduate employees actually working with the union. The union would actually pay an assistantship for two graduate employees. And the other one was, what was the other one? I'm drawing a blank now.
It was about notice of appointments.
That's right. So. Yeah, so, I mean, and hardly even monetary issues, and we were thinking that this would be something to get the ball rolling, get some momentum going in our negotiations, something easy to talk about, and we never heard a peep from the other side as much as we pushed. To talk about that.
Disappointing.
Yes.
Disappointing, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a little music break. Before that, though, I just want to encourage our listeners out there to support listener-supported community radio here at WFT Radio. You will not hear any program like the Labor Hour on corporate radio programs, I guarantee you. And we don't have any kind of corporate advertising. That's why we're able to stay on the air as a program. And that's why WFT is able to basically have all the diversity that they have as far as music and public affairs shows, because we do not rely on corporate advertising funding. So therefore, it's up to you to help us stay on the air. So please call in with a pledge at 359-4, basically, Bob, what's the number? I'm sorry.
359-9338.
That's it, 9338. Thank
and
you very
if
much.
If you're outside of the area listening on the internet, that's area code 217-359-9338. Or you can pledge online at weft.org.
Thank you very much. We'll be right back. then, yes, I wanted to dedicate that song to the graduate employees of the University of Illinois. We do the work. Tom, sort of a follow-up to that, one of the stories we had under one of the PSAs, I should say.
I've got some very interesting numbers here. An October 2005 National Gallup poll found that 78% of Americans favor making marijuana legally available for doctors to prescribe in order to reduce pain and suffering. A 2008 poll found that 62% of East Illinois residents and 68% of all Illinoisans allow seriously and terminally ill patients to use and grow medical marijuana for personal use if their doctors recommend it. Furthermore, the use of medical marijuana to treat the seriously and terminally ill has been endorsed by the American College of Physicians, American Nurses Association, American Public Health Association, Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and the American Academy of HIV Medicine, as well as 76% of physicians and 86% of nurses, according to a 2003 WebMD poll.
Well, it sounds like a no-brainer to me, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're back with our two guests from the Graduate Employees Union. Okay, guys, I wanted to ask you something about something I heard about basically the Graduate Employees platform. But first, I wanted to ask you a question before I forget, how much is Chancellor White making a year, and what is the total salary packages of the administration at the U of I?
I don't remember those figures offhand. Do you, Ingbert?
Yeah, so I'm guessing these are ballpark figures here. I believe he's making about $400,000 a year, if I'm right.
Okay.
He has a $300,000 bonus coming up.
On top of the $400,000 salary. Yeah. Plus he gets a free house, free car, and maids and landscapers. And
Country Club membership, you know.
I see. Yeah. Okay. And
his power bill is paid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if he eats at the food service or not, but probably not.
Sorry.
Okay. So let's hear a little bit about the Graduate Employee Union's platform.
Okay. So it's a six-part platform, and these are issues that we've tried to reflect in our proposal. So the issues are living wage, like I talked about before, healthcare and healthcare representation, the fees that they're charging us, parent rights, our tuition waiver, and also notices of appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So each of these issues in a fashion have been, represented in the amendments that we made to the contract.
And what are notices of appointments?
So we can go over each of these in a little bit more depth. Mm-hmm. So notices of appointment is an issue where we have in our current contract a relatively weak language that asks the departments to try and give a notice of appointment at least 30 days in advance. But there's some departments which have not been giving these notices because our language is permissive. And while it's not a problem in cases where there's special needs, where, you know, something falls through or something has to be scheduled last minute, some departments are doing it systematically. And so we're trying to look for stronger language that can guarantee a notice of appointment sooner. As far as tuition waivers go, earlier this semester, the university tried to completely revamp tuition waivers, but they didn't seem to think about what the effect would be on the students who kind of depend on them. And so what we're doing is adding language to our contract that will actually guarantee us the tuition waivers for the appointments that we have. We're basically taking language directly out of the grad handbook and putting it in our contract.
Okay.
As far as parents' rights go, we are interested in trying to make the UIUC campus much more family-friendly area for graduate students. Graduate students with children have a lot of expenses. Childcare can usually cost about $200 a week, which is a lot of money for us to afford.
Yeah, and also a lot of graduate students, both the husband and the wife are graduate students. Is that usually the case?
That's often the case. Mm-hmm. In other cases with our international students, usually one of the students is a graduate student, mm-hmm. and the other student can't work. Mm-hmm. And so that
because of visa requirements.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that means all of them are trying to support, you know, one graduate student's salary, they're trying to support a whole family of three or four.
And this brings in also a whole other issue of Orchard Downs, the graduate married student housing. What's the status on that real quick? I hate to interject, but this is, I think, related.
So, The last in the ongoing saga has been that they have abandoned all plans to redevelop it into an alumni retirement village for now. But they've revisited this before, mm-hmm. and they've been systematically raising the rents. So I used to live at Orchard Downs, mm-hmm. and last year I had to move out because they raised the rent on single one-bedroom apartments by $70 a month.
Wow.
And, you know, I couldn't afford that anymore. And there are a lot of people who are having to move out because of that.
Okay. All right. Then continue. I just had to address sure. that issue there because I thought it related. Okay.
Yeah. So for fees, fees are a one-time per semester expense, which usually add up to about $400, $500. And there is significant hit on our income that we have to be able to save up enough money over the summer at the beginning of the semester in order to afford them in addition to everything else. And so we are going to try to see if we can get that burden reduced.
It's actually something in addition to tuition that they charge us. It's a different revenue stream for the university of just getting money. And so we get a tuition waiver, which says we don't need to pay tuition as long as we're graduate employees. But we still have to pay these fees of like $450 or so dollars.
In other words, they just changed the name of what the...
Right, exactly. For a portion of their... Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so with healthcare, we have ongoing issues with getting the kind of care that we need at prices that we can afford. And so we're bringing this up as an issue, both to address several specific problems that we've had in trying to get better coverage, but also in trying to maintain coverage because the university has been trying to cut some services from the McKinley Health Center, and in trying to get ourselves in a position where we can be part of the decision making about how healthcare is structured and how they decide what to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So we're approaching that on several different fronts.
Okay.
And the final one is living wage. Currently, our living wage is around currently our minimum wage, which I think over half of our GAs and TAs who are part of the bargaining unit are being paid, is about $13,000 a year.
Okay.
The university's own estimate for cost of living in Champaign-Urbana that they calculate for international students who need to plan when they come here is $16,000 a year.
So you're below the poverty line?
Yes.
Okay.
And in fact, most American citizens who have kids qualify for Medicaid and other programs like that. So what we're trying to do is just bring up the minimum salary so that we actually have our students not need to get second jobs and other, you know, find sources of
quite
income
interesting.
To support themselves.
We just did it's going to air on Sunday, a Labor's View television program. We're talking about Walmartization. It sounds like this is what the university is heading to, is a Walmartization type of corporate mentality of running a public institution.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, when they refer to a university as an enterprise,
yes.
I mean, what can you think?
Yes, indeed.
And
whatever happened to labor and learning, the slogan there at the Gateway?
That's exactly right. You know, this is supposed to be the flagship public institution, you know, to help provide quality education to, you know, people in Illinois. And like you were saying, we've expanded the enrollment by about 4,000 students. I just have this, I have a couple figures here. Of all the instructional units or courses that are taught at the university, 23% are actually led by graduate employees.
Mm-hmm.
And of the 100-level courses, that's where all the incoming freshmen are going into, 100-level courses, 40% of those courses are led by a graduate employee. So we have a significant contribution to this successful enterprise of the University of Illinois. And we're just asking to be compensated appropriately for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, this is the thing is, I mean, when our society has gone so far to this extremist corporate view that everything's got to be market oriented, which in reality is not a reality, so to speak, because they only expect market orientation to be put on people that actually do the work as opposed to the elites, if you will. They're not exposed to the ravages of the free market, but they expect everybody else to be. And again, we're seeing it here with a supposed public institution like the University of Illinois. I mean, my God, I mean, you know, you guys need to, and women, of course, lots of women graduate student employees, they need to live, especially those with families. I mean,
that's
and
right.
It's like,
yep.
It's just, it's just, disgusting. That's the word I want to use here. Is it's disgusting that they, I mean, even are trying to play hardball negotiations on simple fundamentals as these.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm not an economist, but to me the economic arguments don't make sense. I mean, we don't sell our students, we don't earn revenue stream from them. What we're as a university, what they provide is, a public service as far as educating the general populace so that we are qualified to, have better jobs, to be more productive, to, benefit the country and its citizens. And trying to measure that in economic terms that were developed for measuring corporations, which actually have a product or a service that mm-hmm. they sell and earn revenue on that, and then try to port that into the university setting just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Our whole purpose in the university is to promote learning and to promote research. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that fits in the economic model.
To me, it's part of infrastructure, And
exactly.
That's how it should be looked at. Bob, Tom, any last questions you might want to ask our guests here before we turn it over to Bar Diverse?
Now, this mediator, he's not getting involved immediately, right? It'd be a couple, 2-3 weeks down the road.
We're at the mercy of their schedule, the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service, and
and the university schedule, of course,
right. But we do have a list of dates, and I guess we're just going to have to hash out what works between us, the mediator, and the administration's representatives. So we'll see.
Okay. And Tom, any last questions for our guests?
Not that I can think of right offhand.
Okay. Well, guys, thanks a lot for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
To give us some updates as this goes, and we'll be more than happy to include in our news segment because we definitely, and the public needs to know about this. And
We'll do.
Okay,
we'll
very good.
Thanks.
Okay, you've been listening to the Illinois World Labor Hour 90.1 FM WFT and broadcast webcast worldwide at www.wft.org. We're going to leave you with a little bit of Ann Feeney, and then coming up will be Bard Diverse.
Happened to